This is Fresh Air. Since the start of the ground war, approximately 20,000 Iraqis have been taken prisoner of war. We called retired Colonel Howard Levy, author of the two-volume book Prisoners of War in International Armed Conflict, published by the Naval War College. I asked him how he interprets the large number of Iraqi surrenders during the first 2 days of the ground war.
I imagine that there were a lot of young men who had been drafted into the Army within the past year, who wanted no part of war, and who, until the ground war started, were unable to surrender. They took advantage of the advance of the coalition forces and gave themselves up.
Do you think they wanted out anyways?
They wanted out, yes. I don't think this will continue. I think from now on, what you will have is the people who surrender are those who are either wounded and can't fight anymore, or who are surrounded, something like that.
So you think it was basically the front lines who were so willing to surrender?
It's strange that they were on the front line, that type of person, but it happens.
Well, the other rationale for it would be that the front line was made up of the more inexperienced troops, people who were basically being used as fodder.
That's right. There is some—I've heard statements by some of the military analysts to that effect, that the Iraqis had put a lot of unqualified people up in the front line to take the brunt of the first attack.
Now, I know the U.S. military has been a little concerned about the number of surrenders actually slowing the military's advance down, slowing the coalition forces' advance down. What specifically is required when so many troops surrender and have to be taken prisoner of war?
I don't think that the coalition forces are concerned about that, slowing them down, because they have military police who are trained as prisoner of war guards. And the surrendered people are merely turned over to them. They're lined up. They're marched back to where there are trucks to take them if it's a long distance to go. And they're guarded and brought back. It's only the first contact that causes any problems for the fighting troops.
What does it take to process somebody when they turn themselves over?
They're interrogated. Name, rank, serial number, and date of birth. A tag is made out and tied to their jackets. And if they are a particularly important prisoner of war, for example, maybe one who was a radar operator or something like that, they may be interrogated by intelligence people. The convention provides that all they have to give, the only information they have to give, is name, rank, serial number, and date of birth. But that doesn't prevent you from asking other questions. It only prevents you from using force to get answers to your questions. So that if you ask a man what kind of a radar do you have, and he wants to tell you, there's nothing wrong with that. He can tell you. And a good deal of intelligence information is obtained that way.
I was reading in the newspaper this morning that American troops are being more well-trained in the rules of warfare and the Geneva Conventions than they've been in previous wars. Do you think that that's true?
I think it's true because Vietnam showed the necessity for it, and the Army and the Marines both have developed quite extensive programs for training our people in the law of war. Both through motion pictures and lectures and actual in practice operations, they include prisoners of war and show them what they have to do with them.
Is this as a result of criticisms of American military behavior in Vietnam?
Well, yes. I'm sure partially that was it, because things in Vietnam demonstrated that there was not inadequate instruction on the laws of war. The men were receiving, when they arrived in Vietnam, they were receiving a couple of hours of instruction on the laws of war before they were sent to units. But it didn't get through the information that they weren't concerned with the laws of war. They were concerned with the fact that they were about to go into battle.
What kind of instruction are they getting now?
Well, they're getting much, much more than that. They're getting it back here, not just before they go into battle. Every soldier and every Marine who is engaged in fighting now has had instruction back here in the United States during his basic training and during his advanced training.
My guest is retired Colonel Howard Levy. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Howard Levy, the author of the book Prisoners of War in International Armed Conflict. The Saudis are keeping most of the prisoners of war, even the ones captured by American troops, yes?
Yes. I think the arrangement in the coalition is that the Saudis will be the detaining power for all prisoners of war. And they built an encampment, a prisoner of war camp, some time ago, which I understand has facilities for 50,000 prisoners of war.
What's the rationale for turning the prisoners of war over to the Saudis?
Well, you can't have everybody can't have their own prisoner of war camp. For example, if there are 3,000 Egyptians, they can't have a prisoner of war camp. If there are 5,000 of another country, so that you have to consolidate them. In Korea, we made the mistake of having the United Nations Command as the detaining power. Well, it was a mistake because the United Nations Command had no law. And if we wanted to try a prisoner of war, we had to devise law for it, which I consider to be a violation of the convention to create law that way. So in this instance, the Saudis are the logical people because it's their territory there that the camp is on. It's their territory that the all the coalition forces are located on. So it's logical to have them as the detaining power. Now, that doesn't excuse the capturing power. The capturing power always retains responsibility for the treatment of the prisoners of war. And the basic theme of the treatment is humaneness. If we were to find that the Saudis were mistreating the prisoners of war that we had captured, we'd have an obligation to tell the Saudis either comply with the convention or return the prisoners of war to us, and we'll detain them.
Do you know anything about the Saudis' track record in terms of treatment of prisoners of war?
I don't think they have a track record. I don't know that they've had any great war up to this time.
You know,
I'm sure that the United States and the other countries that are turning prisoners of war over to them have monitoring groups. We did in Vietnam. When we turned them in Vietnam, you know, we turned them over to the South Vietnamese. They ran the prisoner of war camps. But in each prisoner of war camp, we had a small group of military police who supervised to ensure that the convention was being complied with.
How worried about security would you be if you were overseeing this the Saudi prisoner of war camp?
Well, I understand that they have built walls, dirt walls, bulldoze them so that, it'll be difficult to get out. And if you do get out, where are you? In the middle of a desert. You have no water. You have no food. Where are you going? I don't think that they have too much worry about prisoners escaping.
How soon after a ceasefire do you think prisoners of war would be released?
Well, the convention says that they will be released upon the cessation of hostilities. It says they will be released and repatriated. In Korea, we established the precedent that repatriation is a voluntary matter, that if you don't want to be repatriated, you don't have to be, if you've got some other place to go. And I imagine that a good many of the 20,000, this first group, particularly the 1,500 or so that have been captured earlier, much earlier, that they won't want to go back to Iraq as long as Saddam Hussein is there, because he will probably do what Stalin did with returned prisoners of war, either execute them or send them to Siberia. Iraq doesn't have a Siberia, so their only alternative is execution.
So you think that that many of the Iraqi prisoners of war would end up going to other Arab countries?
That's right. I think they would. Many of them will ask for that and not want to go back. Unless, of course, if Saddam Hussein is overthrown, then the situation will be different.
What are your concerns about the Americans being held prisoner of war by the Iraqis? And I'm sure there will be more Americans in that situation as the war continues.
There shouldn't be too many, because an advancing army doesn't lose many by becoming prisoners of war. It's only when you're in a static position that you lose people by or when you're overrun, as the Iraqis have been. But the Iraqis have violated just about every provision that was available to them for violation of the 1949 Geneva Convention. Incidentally, I might mention that that convention has more parties than there are members of the United Nations. Practically every country in the world, with the exception of a few Pacific Island countries, which have no military forces, maybe have a police force of 100, every other country is a party to that convention. Iraq has been a party to it for some 30 or more years. During the Iran-Iraq war, it paid no attention to it, and during this war, it has paid no attention to it.
Colonel Howard Levy is the author of Prisoners of War in International Armed Conflict. This is Fresh Air.